Welcome back. Again, I'm Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. So, halfway through the ninth step, I start reading, actually from page 83 with the people that I work with, where it talks about if we are painstaking about this phase of our development. When you actually have the experience of being halfway through the ninth step, right, the sense that you can relate to what it's saying comes stronger, just like when I changed the context of it to the promises of alcohol, right? You get the sense that when you actually are halfway through the ninth step, you can relate to this at a different level. Which also means that what they're saying here is that the feeling about the stuff that you might relate to in page 52, right, you may not be able to relate to it like you related to it initially. Which means that there's been some movement in your life, movement in your spiritual condition. Right? So, I have some stuff to talk about here with step 10 that may be different than what you've heard. I'm not telling you need to do it my way, but I'm going to share with you how I look at this. Right? I don't believe that when I'm writing inventory, I'm writing a 10 step. Right? Which is not to say that I don't believe that writing inventory isn't useful. Writing inventory is a spiritual tool, right? But if I'm writing inventory, right, it means something else happened. Because there's a couple things. I guess I'll jump forward just to make this point. Halfway through, this is on page 84, the paragraph with the second indentation. Halfway through, it says, "We continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear." That sounds like an inventory, right? And it does say we continue to take personal inventory. Right? But in step 11, on page 86, it says, first indented paragraph, second line down. Right? When you're reviewing your day, it's were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? That sounds like another inventory, doesn't it? So if I'm writing inventory later, am I doing the 10th step or the 11th step? Right. I like to draw a line in between steps 10 and 11, just for clarity's sake. The 10th step is what I'm doing with you. It's about watching my relationship and my behavior with you. The 11th step is being mindful of my behavior and my relationship with God. Right. So being mindful of my relationship with people around me and being mindful of my relationship with God. And I draw this line through the center of it. Because there is an overlap. Right. I'm going to start reading from page 84. It's this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and to continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Right. Mindfulness is a basic spiritual practice, right? Not unusual in almost any path, right? We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past, right? We're going to clean up the rest of the other half of the ninth step. We have entered the world of the spirit. Right? That place deep down inside, that vast inner landscape that we've never been able to really, really see clearly. And our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Some people call 10 and 11 the maintenance steps. This talks about growing in understanding and effectiveness. Right? That's not maintaining, it's about growing. Right? It's easy to get into a place where you think that this is what Alcoholics Anonymous is. you know, this is everything that I can get from this program, right? And I have to look elsewhere. And basically what you're doing is you're saying, you're putting a glass ceiling on what this program can do and what God can do, right? If my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and that's my practice, that is incorporated into my practice, and the idea that there's always going to be more for me, that breaks through that glass ceiling, right, to an attitude where this always could be more for me. I can always have a deeper understanding of what this means, right? Because we're really, at this point, first time through, we're kind of new at this spiritual thing. We don't know what to think about it. We don't know. Maybe you need to start reading some books. Maybe you need to start looking around at what other people do to practice a spiritual way of life. Right? Grow in understanding and effectiveness. Understanding of what God's will is for me and effectiveness in the world. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Right? If I hit a glass ceiling, there's no reason to continue. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Underline the word watch. Right? Doesn't say right. It says watch. Right? When I'm in the middle of an interaction with somebody, I'm continuing to watch my behavior and how I'm treating them. Right? They may say something that might bother me. I have had an experience with why things bother me throughout this process. Right? I understand that I have deep-seated fears that result in delusions that set up an attitude that cause me to react selfishly. I feel that I have to protect myself from you if I'm not in a good place. Right? I watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Right? And when these crop up, and they will, we ask God at once to remove them. Right? So I'm watching for these things to come up and turning to that power which I said I will turn to. Right? But still, this is not necessarily about God here. It's his instructions of what I'm doing in front of you. It says, we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Who's going to be immediately in front of you? The person you're having the interaction with. Right? Who are you going to make amends to? Right? Probably that same person. Right? If I'm going through life in a mindful way, the hope is here that I'm seeing when I've said something, maybe out of trying to protect myself from what you're doing or for whatever reason, being mindful of how I'm treating others, right? And if I've overstepped some bounds, right, and did something or said something that was hurtful, the time to address it best is right then and there with that person, right? Or maybe there was three people there and I said something to one and they walked out the door and I turned to the other one immediately and say, right, how did that come out bad? Did I hurt that person? Right? It's about watching my behavior and behaving. Right? Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Right? That person might still be that person that we turn our thoughts to try, someone we could help, might be still be that same person that we just possibly hurt by our comments or our behavior. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Right? It's our code, but it's not always easy. Right? Right? On my own power, behaving the way that comes naturally, it's impossible. I saw that all through the fourth step, right? And here are the tenth step promises. And unlike the ninth step promises, A lot of these we may never have experienced previously. It says, and we have ceased fighting anything and anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. Remember on page 24 where Bill refers to touching the hot stove over and over? Like, there's a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. That was Bill's reference to a level of insanity, right, that we couldn't get beyond on our own. Right? And here in the 10th step, it says we recoil from it as from a hot flame. That assumes that you've got a level of increased sanity in your life. It says we react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. Right? We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. How much thought and effort has been put towards learning how to control our drinking or to not drink? Right? It's been focused on other things. It's only the first half of the first step that asks us to look at our drinking. The rest has been other things, right? So we're not working on not drinking. It just comes, and that's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I've been around alcohol, right? And I haven't drank. You know, there was times when I could not go to a party and not drink. Right? That I couldn't do certain social situations and not drink. Even when I was telling myself I didn't want to drink, I would drink anyway. And that's changed for me. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Right? It does not exist. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. And here's a warning. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Again, that's why it's so important to understand what I talked about over and over again and keep referring back to is that part in the first step where I have the spiritual malady that sets up that condition conducive for this insanity to return. It says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. A laurel is kind of like that, like when a horse wins a race, they put a laurel around its neck, right? And you know, some people, when they get a little bit of time, can look kind of like that. Is, you know, I look at where I've come to in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't need to do anything else, right? And in a trickier way, you can do all of this work and be really involved with this and sponsoring others and think, those people have to write more inventory, but I don't, right? So there's just different levels of the same exact thing. It's ego, right? Thinking that I've got this thing, I don't need to do more. It says we are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. Now that brings up a big debate. Certainly you've heard people at meetings say, I'm so-and-so, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Right? In the beginning, yesterday we talked about the three parts of the problem. Right? Right, the body, mind, and spirit. And there's three parts of alcoholism, right? The physical part, the mental part, and the spiritual part. In the front of the book, it says we recover from a hopeless state of mind and body. It doesn't say spirit. What we recover from is that I don't, as long as I don't drink again, I will never experience the physical craving for more. Right? As long as I don't have the insanity that drives me back. I don't think, I'm not talking about the thinking about alcohol. I'm saying that thing that comes to your mind where you're walking to the liquor store telling yourself, I shouldn't be doing this, you drink anyway. Right? As long as I don't suffer from that like I did on a daily basis, right? Then I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Right? But here it says we're not cured of alcoholism. Right? That's the third side of that alcoholism. It's the third side of that triangle. Right? I am not cured of the spiritual malady. The spiritual malady simply gets suppressed. Right? What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Right? The spiritual, and it says it in the fourth step, right? We straighten up spiritual, if we address the spiritual problem, we straighten up mentally and physically, right? If I don't, if I fall back into the spiritual disorder, it sets up the condition conducive for the insanity to return. So every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. It's not about God yet. It's about telling me what, it's reminding me how I need to live. I need to remind myself that this is not about walking through life alone anymore. And it also says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities, not just in the morning, not just at nighttime prayer. All of our activities. I mean, that would be like while you're washing the dishes. That could be like while you're shopping, driving down the street. Right? All of your activities. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Remember the prayer talked about after the fear section in the inventory? Right. God, what would you have me be? Right. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we've begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. We've done all this work, and now they're saying we have to go further, and it has to involve more action. You know? It also talks about the consciousness of God being like a vital sixth sense. You have five physical senses, right? What is it? I always miss one. Sight, smell, taste, touch, hear, feel. Okay. Hear, right. Isn't that what you've always trusted more than anything? Isn't that what you've based the truth about every situation on, what you think you hear, right? What you think you feel, what you think you see? And hasn't the fourth step shown you that that can be skewed? That what you thought you believed, or what you thought was true, is not always true? And that you can't always trust your reasoning, in your belief systems, or your reactions to situations. And the one sense that they're referring to here is something that we've absolutely never tried. Right? Is to trust the consciousness of a vital sixth sense. And it's not up here. Right? It's in here. Step 11. It's the bottom of page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. And God knows you've heard a lot of definitions, people's definitions about prayer and meditation. Right? But I'm going to give you mine. Right? If you look up the word prayer in the dictionary, there'll be pages of definitions. So you have to look in the context it's used in. And in this context, it's asking God. Right? Step 11 suggests asking God. And if you look up the word meditation, it doesn't mean silence. It means silence if it's silent meditation. Right? So you have to look at the context of the paragraph to see what type of meditation are they referring to. And the type of meditation they're referring to is a contemplative meditation, a directed thought. So what this is saying here is, step 11 suggests asking God to direct our thinking. Right? That's how we start step 11 practice, by asking God to direct our thinking. It says we shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Now, I always thought the word shy meant scared. Right? But shy also means, like, 11 is one short of a dozen. Right? Short. It says we shouldn't be short on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Right? So it's talking about having the proper attitude or thinking right about the way this is going to work and working at it. You know, that doesn't necessarily include, for me, praying for things in my life, right? Which is why understanding that step 10 is becomes so important when you're watching when I see that I'm watching my behavior and my interactions with the people around me. My proper attitude is, and working at it, is bringing that into my life, right? To the people around me. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Now, this is going to validate the statement I just made about the attitude and working at it. It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. And I ask myself, was I resentful? Was I selfish? Was I dishonest or afraid throughout the day? Right? I might end the day with a resentment. Now's a good time to write an inventory if we can't process it without that. Right? Do we owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should have been discussed with another person at once? Right? Did I behave in a manner in front of someone that I should have said, hey, I'm sorry, or I shouldn't have said that, or oh, I regret saying that. You know, that I didn't mean to hurt you, right? It says, I should have discussed with another person at once. Notice what everything that they're referring to here is I'm looking through over my day, looking at my behavior, right? These are all different parts of my behavior. Was I kind and loving towards all? What could I have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time, or was I thinking of what I could do for others, of what I could pack into the stream of life? It says, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Morbid reflection is like dark thinking or gloomy thinking, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. It took me a while to understand this next statement. It says, after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. I thought, why at the bottom of this thing would I be asking for God's forgiveness? And when I realized that this is all behavior, that if I've done this, you know, I wasn't turning to God all through the day. I wasn't asking what would God have me be with this person. I was ignoring the relationship that I said that I wanted with that power. Right? I was ignoring that commitment that I made, that I was going to go inside and start to access that power and bring that out into my day. Certainly, if you were in a relationship and you ignored what they wanted you to do during the day, or what you committed to do during the day, right? Would you have to ask your wife's forgiveness? Right? Only if you wanted to sleep in the big house or in the big bed. This is on awakening. This is what we do in the morning. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. And before we begin, listen to this statement. It sounds a lot like that first sentence where it says we sought through prayer and meditation, right? It says we ask God to direct our thinking, saying the same thing in different words, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. And under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Right? Where thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Right? If I see through my nightly review where I've caused something that I should address right away, or behavior, or caused resentment, or caused harm, right? It's telling me to clear it up right away. Keep the channel open. Don't allow this stuff to start building up again like it can. Right? Acknowledge that you tried the best you could to be mindful and bring God into all of your activities, and look at where you fell short and just practice trying to do better. Just simply as that. Simple as that. Which isn't so simple. You know? It takes practice, and it takes a lot of screwing up, and that's why we have the nightly review, to catch where we fail to effectively 10 step. Some people don't like the word fail in there. But what is it? If I fail to bring God into all of my activities, right, then I fail to continue to take my own inventory. Personal inventory is like a 4-step without a first column. Right? It's not about them anymore. I'm looking at myself. That person did this. How does it affect me? Why did it affect me? In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. And we often are surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. But being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration, and we come to rely on it. Certainly having a lot of ideas where we think God told me to do this could be a scary thought, right, for some. But what about when you're facing indecision, right? Just before I left for Australia, a friend called me and she said, you know, nothing's happening for me here in New Jersey. And another friend offered to let me move down to Florida and just move in and be a roommate and allowed her to change her life. Because she was looking to do some big changes, but she wasn't sure if it was a good move. She says, what do you think, Dan? It's like, how do I know? Right? I didn't necessarily say that, but that's, you get that all the time with people that you're working with. They ask you questions that you can't have the answer for. Stay in New Jersey, don't stay in New Jersey. You know, does God want me in New Jersey? I don't know. You know, how would you know? Right? There's a great meditation that you can that really will help you with that, with this. And it's, I think it's in line with what this is saying. I told her, just sit down in a peaceful, quiet place and picture yourself walking down a peaceful path. And eventually, down that path, you come to a fork in the road. And I told her, I said, one fork points to staying in New Jersey and the other fork points to moving to Tampa, Florida. And I said, in meditation, just walk as far as you can down each path. Ask God to guide the experience. Sit quietly. Walk down all the way down the arrow that says stay in New Jersey. Come back. Walk all the way down the path as far as you can. Move to Florida. Right? Right? Doesn't always give you the right answer, but it certainly will tell you what you like least. Right? And it works pretty consistently. So I wanted to share that with you. And it's completely it completely involves trusting and relying on the inspiration and intuition that comes. And trusting that comes from going inside and pulling from that power deep down inside of us that will help guide our lives. Says we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what the next step is to be. That we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom, for self-will, and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. My prayers tend to lean towards going inside when I feel like I need more strength. Right? God, work through me. Give me the strength that I need to accomplish what I need to do. Right? I certainly thought that maybe since I'm out here doing all this stuff for you guys that I should buy a few lottery tickets, though. Joking. I didn't, though. Yeah, really? 30 million. Huh? So, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. Underline the word also. If your morning devotion doesn't include what it's saying here, it's not the 11th step. We have a common solution here that's outlined in this book. It doesn't say you shouldn't have another devotion, but it is not our common solution. Right? Whatever church you belong to, whatever meditative path you belong to, whatever stream of yoga you belong to, it isn't mentioned here. It does not replace being mindful of how you're behaving as you go through the day and bringing that power into your life. Don't confuse your personal spiritual path with the 12-step program. It is not. I'm not saying that your personal spiritual path is bad. It's great. If you are moved that direction, I would encourage that. I think it does encourage you to find your path. But done in conjunction with what it says here, it will enhance the whole thing. It should not replace what it's saying here, though. Because meditation can become a selfish act. Meditation can be what I do to feel better. Or what I do to look better, right? It doesn't necessarily translate into something that I do to act better. It can, right? But this is asking me to look at some specific things. So So we attend to that also. If not members of a religious body, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. I like to use the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer still. Certainly there's plenty of other prayers that people like, and you're not going to be able to say the same prayer year after year after year. Mixing it up is going to keep it interesting. Right? Finding the ones that touch your heart, the ones that you like to reflect on. Right? One suggestion that was given to me early on was, whatever prayer it is, say it mindfully. Think about the words. Think about how it applies to your life. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. I certainly didn't come into here quick to see where religious people were right, nor was I interested in what they had to offer. But the 12-step process has kind of cracked me open to being interested in, you know, what does all this really mean? You know, I'm looking for some explanations at this point, now that I'm new to the spiritual path, you know, where, you know, what can I, you know, how can I, which directions can I lean spiritually? You know, and reading books and finding what touches your heart is a good way to do it. You know, and it's important to note that Alcoholics Anonymous does not impose a belief on you. It just encourages you to search inside yourself for what does sit right. Right? And there's so many different directions you can go with it. Right? But having had an experience with that power working in my life, it certainly encourages me to start to get some explanations. If not for you, at least for me. Right? I happen to be someone that has let go of trying to figure it all out. And I found for me that worked a lot better. I just know that when I go inside, I could tap into this power. Right? And I know that it's not me. I've come to some different explanations, but it's really not something that is attached to anything that I've seen in a religion or, you know. But certainly I still call that power, which I rely on, God. Right? So, in the third step, we made a decision on a way of life. Right? Remember, we talked about this in the third step of this, the keystone being the archway of this vision of this new way of life that we're deciding that we want. Right? That I was going to live a life where that power has to direct my life because I couldn't. That I can't be who I would have me be, and I can't make you be who I would have you be. So that power has to, that I've made that decision that power will be in my life, and I will be who God would have me be, right? And I wasn't able to provide what I need on my own, right? So that decision in the third step was that power would provide what I need, right? So here's my practice as I go through the day, and this is the way of life we've decided in, or into. I'm gonna read it in first person. As I go through the day, I pause when agitated or doubtful, and I ask for the right thought or action. It's because I trust that there's a power that I can turn to, that will provide more power than what I have on my own. I constantly remind myself I'm no longer running the show. God's directing my life. Right? Humbly saying to myself many times each day, Thy will be done. What would God have me be here? And that's how I practice bringing God into all of my activities. When I hit a wall with anything in life, it's because I'm trying to direct the show. I'm trying to use only my power and not tap into anything else, right? And I'm trying to make you who I would have you be. or me, who I would want me to be, and completely ignoring the need for more power. It says we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decision. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Right. There's nothing that will energize you more and make you more excited about life by being useful in the world, being useful to other people. Right. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in this simple way we have just outlined. Right. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. They did it again. After all this work, now they're saying that we have to do more. Okay. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. You know, what's been proven to me is that the best part of this program has been working with others. Yet it's also the part where a lot of people don't even get to. You know, some people get locked into service work in the fellowship, in the offices. Okay? I think that anybody that's gone through this process and sponsors people and works with people knows that there's a difference between working with others and service work. Right? Doing both is better than doing one or the other. Right? But certainly, working with another alcoholic has given me more in my life than anything else. Right? Book says it's an experience you must not miss. Must not miss. We get some more water. Talked a little bit last couple of days, haven't I? 12 Steps says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Right? And I see how each step gave me a little bit more of that puzzle. Chipping away a little more, bit more of that piece of Dan that thinks that he doesn't need God. Right? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of finishing the first 11 steps moved me to a place where I know that I could be effective, and going through a process that has proven to be reproducible, I can work with others, and they in turn have been able to work with others who have in turn been able to work with others, right? Talks about watching this fellowship grow up around you. There's nothing like sitting in a restaurant with my sponsees and their sponsees and their sponsees, right? And we're just all on the same page, doing the same things. You know, I have great grand sponsees sitting at this table asking me questions about something they may not have gotten. Right? And that really, it really becomes like the more the focus of my usefulness is not necessarily to manage and control anybody else's life today, right? But to direct them towards a spiritual solution, right? Did you pray about that? Right? I know I hated hearing that when I asked my sponsor something and he said, "Did you pray about that?" Right? No, but. You know, if I'm clear that I can't manage my own life, then I certainly have no business trying to manage theirs. Right. Right. It says, having had that spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry that message to other alcoholics. And I think, and I like to look at the context of that, is not, I'm not trying because I don't know if I can. I'm trying to carry this message, but I don't know if you're going to do it. I try to carry the message that I believe in, and you're either going to want it or you're not. You have to take responsibility for your own spiritual life. If you're not willing to do that, you know, then I'm only going to put as much work in somebody else as they're willing to put into this path on their own. It can be really, really difficult to work harder than they are, right? And painful. You know, I've seen it. I've had a few sponsees die. In fact, I mentioned this, I think Thursday night. I had a really close friend that for 20 years I was trying to encourage him to get into the program. Finally, the court system kind of helped the process. And started working with him. But, he decided that if he could only get his work situation together and the relationship back, if he could only pull that old way of life back together, you know, then he can really focus on this stuff. And I tried to instill in him that those are not the things that helped you before, and that those are not the things you're going to be able to keep if you don't stay sober. That there are certain, the family is important, work is important. But I have to understand that my priorities when I'm new in this program has to be sobriety first, and then those things have to follow closely after. If I lose the first one, I've lost the other two anyway, right? He shook his head, yes, I agree with you. I know, but that wasn't really what was going on, right? I found him dead a couple months ago. It was actually the weekend of a spiritual retreat, which I practically had to force him to go to. Dragged him, kicking and screaming, to a beautiful retreat center with a great AA leader. Spent this great weekend, and dropped him off at home. 2 hours later, his mother called me, crying, saying, "He's dead." Right? I thought that he was just really angry because I actually made him go to this retreat. The fact was, he wasn't sober the whole weekend. But I thought it was anger, but it was just that he was nodding out a little bit. There's a lot of painful situations that you experience trying to help people in this situation. That just goes along with it. But it also throws in my face the seriousness of our condition. Right? And if I've actually had an experience with these 12 steps, I can't look at him and be necessarily angry. I have to see, how was I when I was like him? Not really wanting help. Right. My experience has shown me what it's like to be where he's at, or where he was, I should say, at this point. Right, and he couldn't do any better than what he did, and he wasn't ready, right, to completely accept this way of life. Wouldn't have been complicated, but he just wasn't ready. On the other hand, you hear all different types of stories of. And one guy called me from Northern California, and it was his 25th year birthday. And he says, "Dan, you don't know me, but I just wanted to give you a call and say I just really appreciate all the stuff that you've done. And I'd like to just start off by telling you a little story." And he says, "You know, I 23 years of sobriety, I was ready to blow my brains out. In fact, I had called my sponsor. And I told him that I'm going to take this pistol and I'm going to go to my home group and I'm going to blow my brains out in front of all of them. This thing doesn't work." And his sponsor says, "Who is this?" I says, "Oh, just come over here first on your way to the meeting. We'll talk and then you go do what you want to do." By the time he left the guy's house, he was saying the set-aside prayer. He went through the 12-step process starting at 23 years of sobriety, and it changed his life. He sponsored more people at that point than he'd ever sponsored in his first 23 years, in just those couple years that he started doing the process out of the big book. I get a lot of stories, but some of the other stories on the other end is I have people that I work with that have hung around Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 and 20 years, never really grasped the depth of their hopelessness in step one. You know, taking them methodically through this process and showing them what's really going on underneath this. What is the part of this that you don't see, right? You know, why is it that why do you need more power, right? You know, because getting clear on what I need the power for, right, shows me that this is a matter of life and death, right? And seems to move people harder towards the rest of the steps, right? So the step one has to be in place. Otherwise, you know, otherwise I just, if I don't really need much power, then I don't really need much God, right? But if I see right in the beginning that nothing's going to change unless I get more power, and I could die from this, right? Then I'm reaching and moving forward like my life depends on it, right? I know how to present that to someone. I'm not trying anything. I have a simple, reproducible process outlined in the Big Book, right, that will affect that change in people, and I've seen it thousands of times. Right? But where the tried word comes into that step is that not everybody wants to put the effort in. Not everybody wants to do this. And that's fine. You know, that's fine. If you don't want to put the work in and you found something you like better, who am I to tell you that you're staying happy and sober wrong? Right? So if you're happy with what you're doing, keep doing it. Right? But if you got a sense that you'd want to see if there's more for you, to break through that glass ceiling, right? Right? If you get the feeling that you'd like to possibly do something that's proven to be more easily transferable or, you know, to other people, you know, you might want to try what the Fellowship of the Spirit Travelers are doing and what I've laid out in that over there in the Big Book Awakening, right? You know, but certainly it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to put that much work in or needs to put that much work in. But it certainly has done a lot for me. Right? It certainly has done a lot for me. So, the 12 steps and working with others and all this, it's a great way to live, but sometimes you can find it can be really impactful on your life if you get a lot of sponsees and, you know, sometimes doing things that are 12-step related will affect work. Sometimes it'll affect relationships, right? But the fact is that I know for sure that those things never made me or brought me to a place that this program could bring me, right? Working with others, traveling around and doing things like this. You know, I walked into this program really basically feeling like if I jumped in front of a truck, the world would be better, right? Feeling useless, right? That's not the case today. My life has purpose, meaning, value. Not because of how much money I have or what I'm doing or, you know, it's because I see people getting helped by when I just sit down face to face with them and just start going through the Big Book. I don't make much stuff up. It's a simple process. I just turn the statements into questions as we go through the book, and I use what the book says, right, as the guide. And we just talk about their experience, and I talk about my experience, right? And this journey inside begins, right, with this new person who has no clue of why his life has gotten so messed up from something that was so important for so long in their life. Could not perceive a life without alcohol or drugs or whatever your thing is, right? Could not perceive a life without it, yet the same thing that was so important in your life has turned around and just shredded your life, right? And they're sitting there baffled going, what happened? Right? And looking back, it's like, that's just like me. That's how I came in. And I see from my experience, my personal experience, I know how they feel. And I can talk to them about how when I came in. And we just move through this simple process, and I watch them wake up. I watch them wake up. Right? You can't help but feel the value of your life with that. And it's not because I'm anything special. It's because the process is special. Right? The book is special. What was handed down to me helped me present that. Right? And that's what I hand out to the people I work with. I approach working with somebody, I approach sponsorship from the perspective of that I'm teaching a teacher to teach. My job is not to manage their life, it's to show them how to work with others and encourage that path. Right? That's my only job. When I'm face to face with like a decision on whether I should do something with them or not do something with them, it's like, my head goes right to, will this help them work with others if I go ahead and do this, or should I just leave it out? Right? If it'll help them work with others, then that's my guiding principle. Right? My own experience was that the first time I did the steps out of the big book, I went from a place of darkness into a place of light. Right? And a lot of people, I see some people nodding their heads, moving from a place of total unawareness of any of this stuff into a place of having had an experience with these 11 steps just kind of cracks you open. Right? Subsequent times through the steps are not quite the same, right? Because you're moving from a place of being in the light to hopefully a little bit brighter light. So the movement is a little smaller, but you keep doing it and you just keep growing, right? You might have heard people say that they go through the steps many times. They wouldn't do it if it was a waste of time, right? Obviously, they're getting something. They liked it. They say, I want to do it again, right? The wrong reason for doing the steps, though, would be that something's bad happening in my life. Some people approach the process to avoid taking responsibility for things that are going on in their life. Right? Remember, I made this commitment to turn to God for power to move through situations in my life. Right? It's not about using the steps to fall back on. When I'm working with someone or sponsoring someone, they come to me and they say, Dan, I think I need to go through the steps again. I say, why? Right. If they tell me it's because they broke up in the relationship, or they lost their job, or they're discontent with their life, you know, those are great opportunities to turn to God. You know, bad things that happen in your life are great learning experiences and great opportunities to see how that power can work when you rely on it. Rather than go back and start the process again, thinking that the process is going to fix you. Right? This is all about getting in touch with that power and learning how to rely on it. Right? So, I know you guys have been sitting down a while, and I really had a great time this weekend, and I hope you. I hope I said something that helped somebody and or any of you, and maybe even excited a few of you to do some more stuff. Right? just, you know, I just really appreciate being put in a position to be able to do this kind of thing. And I really am grateful that I was brought out here for this. I want to thank the people that brought me out, the Fellowship of the Spirit Travelers.